We go on hiatus for 2 weeks for our membership drive, and all hell breaks loose. We hit 100 homicides.
We have to reject this as terms of it being anything close to being normal.
The bus service comes to the brink of shutting down. Sunfresh closes.
It's going to be tragic on this neighborhood.
And the Missouri Attorney General resigns. Is that newsy enough for you? And whatever happened to that summer stadium announcement we were promised?
We have a stated objective of being able to talk about a specific location. I'm calling it, you know, the middle of the calendar year in that June-July period.
It's August and still nothing. Those stories and the rest of the week's big local news stories straight ahead.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Welcome, I'm Nick Haynes. It is so good to be back with you. Thank you for your patience with us as we took a back seat over the last couple of weeks for a significant fundraising drive around here on our air. Now that we're back, we're going to make up for it by not only bringing you the biggest news stories of the past week, but pick up some of the most impactful and downright head-scratching stories we missed while we were away. Now, jumping on board the Week in Review bus to make sense of it all is KCUR News Director Lisa Rodriguez and former Star reporter Dave Helling, from Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, and tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR, Brian Ellison. Now, I'm not sure this was on anyone's bingo card this week, but Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey has resigned to join the Trump administration. He'll be the new deputy co-director of the FBI. When Trump was first picking his cabinet, he was considering Bailey for the attorney general spot. This seems a big step down from that. What's so compelling for Bailey to give up what is one of the most powerful positions in Missouri to take a job when he's not even going to be the office leader, Brian?
Well, I think that no one is too surprised that Andrew Bailey is leaving for Washington, D.C. Some say that he, from the day after he was elected in 2024 to his full term as Attorney General, he's been looking for this appointment. The reality, though, is I think he is a compelling candidate for the current Trump administration and its model of how they want to run a Department of Justice. As Missouri's Attorney General, Andrew Bailey was aggressive and passionate about pursuing conservative political causes. He filed legal cases against the Biden administration before Trump was elected and has risen to the defense of the Trump administration since then. He also spends a lot of time on Fox News, which all of which is, I think, very appealing for the Trump administration.
You know, I think it's fascinating you say that, because I was just reading a book called 2024, all about the 24 campaign, and actually Andrew Bailey comes up in it, Dave, and it said in there Trump was looking at him to be attorney general, and the reason he passed him up was because he wasn't, quote, aggressive or, quote, exciting enough. So that's changed in the last 6 months or so?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, his job as co-deputy director, it's kind of like double secret probation, you know. It's not clear what his portfolio will be. My guess is they've put him in place to replace Dan Bongino, who is the current deputy director of the FBI, or to put him in that stream so that he can ascend in the administration over time, because he's not going to stay in this job for very long at all. And there are other people in the Trump administration who, for one reason or another, have angered the president. So that, I think this is really just park him in a place, get him a nice apartment in Washington, D.C., and then let him move up the chain.
Given the president's priority on immigration, deportations, one would think that Kris Kobach would have been a more likely choice, the Kansas attorney general. Why is he still in Topeka and Andrew Bailey now moving to Washington?
A little more tainted goods, Kris Kobach. Okay. He worked with Trump in the first administration, and it didn't turn out well. So my guess is that they're looking for a bit of a fresh face.
Now, Andrew Bailey will officially leave his post in Jefferson City at the start of September. Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe hasn't let the grass grow under his feet. Within hours of Bailey's announcement, he had picked former Missouri House Speaker Catherine Hanaway to replace him. What do we need to know about her? Is she similar to Bailey, or will she take a very different approach to the job, Lisa?
I think on its face, this is a far different person in the role of Attorney General. Catherine Hanaway was former Speaker of the Missouri House. earned praise from both Democrats and Republicans when her nomination was announced to fill this role. That said, the Republican Party is very different than it was in 2002 when she was leading, when she was in one a leadership role in this party. It has really coalesced around what is Trumpism, and that's the way that the House is. So we'll see if she is the same type of leader as she was then and acknowledged for bipartisanship.
One of the complaints about Andrew Bailey was that he was filing all of these civil lawsuits, mainly against Joe Biden when he was president, and a lot of these national corporate types rather than focusing on Missouri issues. Catherine Hanaway says, no, she's going to be focused on crime, which is also Mike Kehoe's big priority.
Yeah, so she should fit right in because Missouri has a crime problem, St. Louis, Kansas City, Springfield, and the surrounding areas. But she, I guess if you wanted to go with a borderline conservative, I think she is one. I would call her one based on her relationship when she was in the House. I think Bailey was extremely conservative, going after people who the courts had released and filing lawsuits to keep them locked up, even though the court said let people go. So it's going to be interesting to see whether she changes the climate.
And it's also a major stepping stone as Attorney General to be the next governor. When you think about Josh Hawley, took that job to become a senator. We had Eric Schmidt. Well, actually, both of them were Attorney Generals in Missouri prior to becoming U.S. Senators. Even.
Right, and it isn't clear. If you look in the Missouri Constitution, the most undefined job of all is Attorney General. It's not like Secretary of State or Treasurer or other statewide offices. It is seen often as a stepping stone for its occupant to other jobs. Whether Catherine Hanaway is still interested in that or not, I don't know. The governor's office presumably will be occupied for another 7 years plus, so that's a long time to wait. But Eric said something very important in terms of Andrew Bailey's efforts to keep innocent people in jail, and then his support for letting guilty people out of jail with January 6 and other things. Mm-hmm. Catherine Hanaway, if she wants to be serious about crime, and that, for that matter, Governor Keogh, they should focus on making sure that guilty people are punished and innocent people are not, and that may rise to the top of the agenda.
Now, speaking of people giving up their powerful jobs, did you see the announcement this week from Jackson County Executive Frank White? Facing the cold reality of a recall election at the next month, in fact, he has made a big decision. He sends out a letter to supporters declaring he will not run for re-election when his term ends next year. Is that an acknowledgement that he feels he can't win next month's recall election, Eric?
Well, it's either or, because he also said, well, I might run again at a later date.
Okay, so it wasn't as definitive as it made it sound.
No, it wasn't. And this might be a move to get sympathy.
Yes.
Hey, I'm gonna leave anyway, so don't recall me. Give me a pass.
So will it change any votes, Lisa? Some people thinking, well, you know, he'll be gone in a year anyway. I'll just give him the benefit of the doubt right now.
Perhaps. I did think it was a surprising announcement to make so close to a recall election. I think, as Eric said, he saw the writing on the wall. I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to step down before a recall election and not even face that to begin with. But it, also, I can't help but notice the humor in the hedge of, but I might, this is not definitive. I reserve the right to change my mind.
If one case that Frank White might make if he stays in office and faces the recall, the one argument he might make is because of the way the recall system works in Jackson County, you don't know who the replacement is going to be. And if you think that Frank White is bad, the next person could be even worse. And so his argument could be, hey, you know, stick with me for another year, then you'll get your choice. Whoever replaces Frank White, if he's recalled, will be the odds-on favorite to be elected for the full term next November, which means the replacement 5, maybe 10 years in office. So that's a pretty crucial decision without knowing who that person is going to be, and that's the argument he may end up with.
Well, and to that point, I think the swipe in his letter where he says, I may run again, he said, I may run again because I don't trust the motivations of other people who work for the Jackson County Legislature or other people on the legislature. So I think that is exactly what this is about. It is about raising concerns about what might come after him, whether that happens at a recall or a year from now.
All righty, what happened to those promised summer summer announcements by the Chiefs and Royals about their stadium plans. This spring, Royals owner John Sherman said it was the team's objective to provide a specific location either in June or July. Here he is at a Royals press conference back in March.
I think we have a stated objective of being able to talk about a specific location. I'm calling it, you know, the middle of the calendar year in that June-July period.
Now, Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong. We're in August, so this is past. What happened?
Yes, it is past, and nothing.
Yeah.
A lot of speculation has happened. There's been more speculation about a site in Johnson County, more speculation about whether or not North Kansas City is even a viable option or even in the running. Otherwise, not a lot of action there. I have continued to be stunned at how the Royals have handled this entire conversation, beginning years ago, promising timelines and deadlines. Every time they miss a deadline that they promise, I think they lose trust.
Yeah, and this means also that there will definitely be no public vote this year. I mean, the deadline to get on the ballot for November is on Tuesday of next week.
August 26th. Which means that nobody, unless something dramatic happens, the Missouri component, local component required under the law to get the Missouri subsidies will not be known by the end of the year. At the same time, a deadline has been set in Kansas to make a decision on both of these things by the end of the year. That, to me, suggests that the winds are blowing in Kansas' direction because they'll make up their mind. They won't possibly know, the teams won't possibly know the local component this year if it's in Missouri. I think they're leaning toward Kansas, and those negotiations are underway.
Did John Sherman lose some of his leverage this week when I saw the Major League Baseball commissioner talked about expanding the league to include Nashville and Salt Lake City? Nashville, of course, one of the big cities we talked about, that could be taking the Royals off our hands if we can't build a new stadium.
Maybe in public perception some leverage was lost, but in fact, the Royals, one thing they have not done is threaten to leave the area, and pretty consistent. John Sherman has said, he said it to me on KCUR a few months ago, one thing we're not considering is going to somewhere like Tennessee. So if they were planning to use that as leverage, that would be a new development.
One other quick note, the people in Leawood and in the neighborhood of the Kansas proposed site for the Royals are starting to get a little antsy about the idea of a 40,000-seat baseball stadium in their backyard. You know, the people in those communities know how to organize. They know how to get their neighbors involved. And so you could see a real local fight in that area if the Royals decide to go out in that direction. And just to not to put a too fine of a point on it, but all the negotiation has been so far with the state of Kansas, and the local governments are going to have to say at some point, hey, we want a piece of this too in terms of zoning and traffic and parking and all the other things involved.
And we've talked about a lot of deadlines as well. If the Royals want to do this before their lease ends in 2031, I think Fox 4 KC this week suggested that construction on a new stadium would have to start in fall of 2026. So there's not a lot of time to actually get this done. There's lots of deadlines looming here.
But they could extend their lease for 5 years and then play this game for the next
Royals decide to go to Kansas, that the people in Jackson County are going to say, sure, we'll extend the lease for another 5 years, whatever we can do to make you happy. I mean, there are a lot of pieces on the chessboard, which is one reason for the delay, Nick, because there are so many moving parts, so many things to be decided.
Texas just did it. Is Missouri next? We're still waiting to hear this week whether Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe will bring back state lawmakers for a special session to redraw Missouri's congressional map. President Trump reportedly wants Missouri to change its political boundaries to squeeze out Kansas City Democratic Congressman Emanuel Cleaver.
We want to keep the House in Republican control, so what we look at, what we're going to do here in Missouri, we'll work with our leadership group and see if there's a path or something that makes sense for Missourians. I would maintain that Democrat states, not just Illinois, but basically on the East and the West Coast, they've been doing this for years.
Well, he seems all in. So what's taking him so long to decide on this session?
The question is, what's taking him so long to make the announcement? I think it's becoming common consensus that there's going to be a special session. As Jason Hancock of the Missouri Independent has said, the only question is whether initiative petition reform will also be on the agenda for the special session. There's going to be one for redistricting. We did also learn this week that there is a map already circulating, a map developed in Washington that would redraw the districts in Missouri, a map that even Republican leadership in Missouri has not yet seen. So that gives you some sense of how this conversation is going on a national level.
Now, and one of the things that they've said, that their 7-1 map could turn into a 5-3 map. And I think that's one of the things that he's like, well, wait a minute, let's pump our brakes here and look at this thing from
a radical. But we're talking about people like Sam Graves, who is in the more rural part of the northern part of our community. Mm-hmm. You know, he won, like, with 70% of the vote. There's right. plenty of leeway here, even if they put more Democratic voters in his district, wouldn't they?
But then you got local races that would come into play
okay.
in the State House that could backfire on them
okay.
as well.
I do think that was why they didn't do it this way back in 2022 when they redistricted right. at the normal time. There really was a risk of in a blue wave year, losing some ground in those seats. I don't know if we're in the same environment as we were 4 years ago, but I do think there's a real concern there that the Republicans want to be double sure of before they take this step.
Now, Mike Kehoe seems to be keen to help President Trump on rewriting Missouri's congressional map. Well, he also answered the call from the president to send Missouri National Guard troops to Washington, D.C.
You know what doesn't make sense? The numbers on the ground in the district don't support 1,000 people from other states coming to Washington, D.C.
Well, the number of Republican governors signing on to send their National Guard troops to D.C. keeps growing. We're now at 6. Is Missouri next, Lisa?
Well, Governor Kehoe has said so far he hasn't been asked directly, so no indication that they're readying troops to send to D.C. That said, I have no I wouldn't expect that if he were asked directly to send troops that he would refuse that.
You know, he did activate the National Guard even to come to Kansas City to police that during anti-Trump protests earlier this summer, so he's certainly keen on doing that.
Yeah, he could do that. Would it be beneficial to the state? He's got his own issues here in the state.
But you think about Mike Parson, Mike Kehoe's predecessor. He sent lots of troops to help Texas on the border there on, you know, to try and solve the immigration question. Right. He was very happy to do that.
Yeah, it's a performative decision in a performative state in which decisions are made by what they look like, not what they actually do on the ground. In this case, though, if Mike Kehoe were to send National Guard forces to Washington to fight crime, he would have to explain why Missouri is one of the highest crime states in America, and particularly in Kansas City and St. Louis. Why would he send troops to address a problem in the district and not do more to address the problem here in his own state? That's a real question he would be asked almost immediately.
Well, with Catherine Hanaway as his new attorney general fighting crime, you might see more activation of forces right here in Kansas City.
You might be, although the attorney general in Missouri doesn't have law enforcement authority in the same way as they do in other states. But I think Dave is exactly right. We saw that actually happen when the governor of Tennessee sent troops and everyone said, oh, look at the crime rates in Memphis and Nashville. They're higher than Washington, D.C. Well, they could say exactly the same thing about Kansas City and St. Louis.
Kansas City's bus crisis is over, at least for now. There were fears we'd be starting the week with route cuts, driver layoffs, and slimmed down bus schedules.
I don't know how I'm going to be able to get to, like, my mental health appointments, like, my probation officer appointments. I rely on the buses for entirely everything.
We've been, like, nervous as heck. Trying to bring up the bus being cut out.
It's definitely an emotional issue, but hold the front page. A budget deal inked with the city over the weekend, keeping the metro's largest bus fleet afloat, but only through April. Gulp. What happens after that, Lisa?
Well, that's a big question. We've seen that they're going to reinstate some bus fares, but the
that would be for the first time since the pandemic when it's been free.
For the first time since the pandemic, $2 bus fares. Now they've said this would be they would be exceptions for people who have income burdens. It's unclear exactly what those would be, how they would prove that getting on the bus. There is some time getting systems back on buses to charge fares again. But the city is also counting on the KCATA in the meantime to figure out a regional funding source to continue to fund the bus service beyond April. Just maintaining the bus service as it is does not mean we have a functional public transit service in Kansas City. And looking ahead to major events like the World Cup, yeah. Something has got to give.
Yeah, so the money's only there till April, and we're bringing in hordes of people from around the galaxy to come here for the World Cup. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, right?
And it's not the only challenge, right? We also heard this week that Barney Alice Plaza won't be done time for a World Cup. The jail, it appears, will not be ready in time for the World Cup. We have we have some real challenges in these few months that are counting down.
You know, Dave, some people would view bus service in a major city just as important as, say, snow removal and, you know, picking up the trash. Why has it become so terribly difficult to actually get it done?
Well, for a couple reasons. First, you're exactly right. Some people do see it as a service, and that's why it was free. You don't charge people for snow removal because it's an important thing in an urban area, and transportation can be argued that as well. The problem, I think, for the metro-wide solution that everyone talks about is people simply don't ride the bus. You just don't have enough passengers, and you can see that in surrounding counties all the time. It's very important in Kansas City, Missouri. In other places, perhaps not as much. Reinstating fares will not save the bus system. It doesn't generate enough money, no matter how much you charge or don't charge. The future of the bus system in our area does not depend on fares. It depends on a constant source of tax revenue to subsidize the bus. And I think there is some effort to try and see if they can get that revenue from places other than Kansas City, Missouri.
We talked about it on our last program before we were interrupted by our on-air membership drive. Now it's closed.
It's going to be tragic on this neighborhood. It's going to be tragic.
What's this tragedy this man is talking about? The shuttering of the city-owned Sunfresh grocery store on Prospect after an $18 million taxpayer investment over the past decade. It even had become a national news story and a new push to have cities run supermarkets, including the new mayor candidate, the leading candidate for mayor in New York. Is this a sign that the answer is no, Lisa?
I think the answer is not in this way. I think we've learned some lessons in this, and that it's not just enough to refurbish a building and have a nice building and then ask for a grocery store, get a tenant, and then stop with your involvement. Running a grocery store is an active, involved endeavor that also does not involve a lot of profits there. And so I think there was a lack of thought about security and maintenance and operation there. So I'm not saying that the city couldn't do it. I think there's a lot of serious conversations about whether it's a wise investment and that there are many other things to consider besides just refurbishing a building.
Well, some people would say, well, they spent $18 million on this thing. I saw the mayor this week saying that was money well spent.
Yeah, and Lisa's right. They put the money in the store, but not with the operator. And I think people have that confused and thinking that community builders got $18 million. The problem was
where did all the money go then?
It went to building the building.
Okay.
I think community builders got $750,000 out of $1.2 million that was promised to them. And when they got to $750,000, they were so far behind that it just ate that up immediately.
When you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
Since we last met around this table, Kansas City hits a grim milestone, 100 homicides. The latest victim, a 14-year-old boy.
We have to reject this as terms of it being anything close to being normal. No parent, no grandparent should be outliving their children.
It's back to school, and Missouri kids have more to worry about than the pain of getting up early. They're no longer permitted to use their cell phones at any point during the school day. It's part of a new law signed by Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe. Worries over insane heat as KC prepares for the World Cup. A KC Current game was delayed 3.5 hours due to unrelenting temperatures this week. Some questioning why the game was even played. Thousands of KU fans get to see their new football stadium for the first time. It's being juiced by the largest donation in college sports history. And have you seen the backlash over male NFL cheerleaders? In Kansas City, it prompts a run to the history books. Apparently, the Kansas City Chiefs had multiple male cheerleaders when the franchise started here back in the 60s.
Nice to go back to history on that one. So what was the big story we missed? One of those or something completely different, Lisa?
You know, City Manager Mario Vasquez was on KCUR just this week and just sprinkled a little detail into the conversation about another project that won't be completed in time for the World Cup, which is Barney Alice Plaza. Mm-hmm. Now, we may have been optimistic in thinking that it could be pulled off in time, but knowing that we won't have a park over 670, as was once promised, we will not have a refurbished Barney Alice Plaza in the middle of downtown for a huge event. That is a lot of things not getting done in enough time, a lot of things where we may be mid-construction during the World Cup. And so there's a big question about what else is not going to happen, what else are we not prepared for when it comes to this match?
And let's hope that 120-degree temperatures during that period of time means we still will have a World Cup. Brian.
The play at midnight.
Yeah.
You know, Nick, I would mention the cell phone story that you mentioned there in your package of stories. It may not seem like the biggest story that the state has told school districts that they have to ban cell phones. And in fact, we did hear this week that a lot of school districts are secretly pleased that they can fall back on, well, it's a state law, so we have to tell you this. But the reality is it's another example of state regulation getting into things that used to be the exclusive terrain of local school districts and local municipalities. And to the degree that that is part of a conservative agenda as well as a progressive one in other places is a significant ongoing development.
Eric.
Maury Woodard is now the new combat director. He's working behind with a six-month delay in the county giving combat the money that they need to operate for the nonprofits. And for the past 10 days, the heat in Kansas City has been totally disrespectful.
Dave.
The Star had an amazing story on Wednesday and Thursday, about someone firing a bullet into the offices of the Kansas City Chiefs and into the office of Coach Andy Reid while Reid was in the office, apparently, according to the story, a shooting that remains under investigation by the Kansas City Police. That's important on its own terms, but the Chiefs are also talking about moving their headquarters, and the idea that someone could shoot a bullet into the coach's office might give them impetus to move it somewhere else and play into this whole discussion we just had about where the stadiums will go for both the Chiefs and the Rams.
Do you know what I found fascinating about that story? You know, it happened 14 months ago, or 15 months ago. Why did it take the media 15 months to get it? Or why did the police hide it for that long?
Yeah, or why the Chiefs didn't talk about it, you know, why? But so there are many unanswered questions, but it's an important story. It has, again, on its own terms, a relevance, but it's also relevant to the discussion over where the team is going to go.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez and Eric Wesson from Next Page KC, KCUR's Brian Ellison and news icon Dave Helling, and I'm Nick Haynes from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.